Well, welcome back, everyone. I hope you were able to be in that last session. Listen, if you did not hear Scotty Smith, you definitely want to get that recording and listen to it again and again, share it with your staff if they're not here, all that kind of thing. It was just an incredible experience. Hopefully, you were here yesterday. If you weren't, our format looks like this. In a moment, we're going to spend about 45 minutes in a kind of a time of training, then answer some questions, then have some conversation with each other before we're sent out. This session ends at 12:30, and you'll be going to lunch from here. My name is Bruce Wesley. I am the pastor at Clear Creek Community Church. I'm part of the executive board of Acts 29, and I'm a part of what was the South Central region. South Central region and the Heartland region have formed together to a new network, one of the five networks in the United States. And just a word also about our network. We are the one network that's still working on the development of what our future work is going to look like together as a network, one of the five networks in the U.S. And we have a network leadership team that's really made up of the previous leaders of the regions that will now represent our network. And in the meantime, we kind of have a point person that's helping that network leadership team function so that everything is still working within our regions, our areas, and the network that we have together. And that person is Joseph Turner. Joseph's right here. You saw him this morning. But I just want you to know who's giving point leadership to coalescing all of our work together as we continue to build out our future as a network. And actually, even what that network's going to be called is still to be determined. So, Joseph, appreciate your leadership to help all of us keep functioning so that those who are interested in planting churches are still going to be able to be assessed, coached, trained, supported as we plant churches together across our network. All right. Well, it's my privilege to introduce to you Chris Alston. Dr. Chris Alston is not only an amazing leader and good friend of mine. He's a guy that I get to work with at the church where I pastor. Chris is one of those guys that has a huge capacity to train leaders, develop leaders. He oversees all of the leadership development at Clear Creek Community Church and reaches into all of the leadership development that we do in the multiple facets that we're involved in, both with Acts 29, with the Houston Church Planting Network, and so on. Chris is also a campus pastor. He oversees the development of campuses. When we went to a multi-campus strategy, I asked Chris to go become the expert on multi-campus strategies. He did nationwide research to become the expert on that so that we had an informed voice in the house about multiple campuses. That's the kind of guy he is, to learn to develop new strategies for ministry. Chris he speaks all across the country, both on family issues, that's where his doctorate is, but also on systems issues, and particularly in systems development for the sake of leadership. He's a great dad, a great husband. He has three daughters, and he is just a good friend. I love his guts. He's one of the best evangelists that I know. And it's an honor to get to share Chris with you because I think he will bless both you individually, but also in the way that you think about church leadership. So today he's going to talk about creating systems that develop and deploy healthy leaders. Welcome, Chris Alston.
Thank you, bro. That was generous. Thank you. I'm also a granddad, so you missed that, right, Bruce? I mean, we celebrate that as well. Hey, good to be with you guys. We are talking about leadership, and you know that, I mean, healthy teams have to have healthy leaders, and those kind of healthy teams, they don't just happen by chance. And so here's what happened when my daughter was about 9 or 10 years old. So she wanted to try out for the very first time for some softball. And so we go out to the softball tryouts, and here's what happens. We've got these three dads running tryouts, and they run the tryouts. I thought they did a pretty good job. I'm just kind of a bystander in this situation. A few days later, my daughter gets the roster that she's going to be on the team. I get a phone call, and they say, hey, your daughter is on this team, but she doesn't have a coach. And I'm like, hold on a second. I thought there was three dads out there running tryouts so that we could form some teams for our community, and you're telling me that she doesn't have a coach. They said, no, here's what happened. It says, those three dads are running tryouts, and they formed one team, and there's now another team that doesn't have a coach. So what do you think happened in that situation? Right? I mean, that team was stacked. I mean, that's what happened. And so I get this whole group of girls that was kind of a combination between the Bad News Bears and League of Their Own. And so what I decided to do, because my daughter's a part of that, I'm like, well, then sign me up. I guess I'll coach the Bad News Bears. And that's exactly what I got. And I'm thinking about this. So I show up the first day of practice, and you soon realize that, man, they stacked the deck completely. Like, my girls, they had gloves on the wrong hand. I mean, they didn't have a clue about what they were doing. I mean, they did show up with no gear whatsoever. And so you immediately don't have to think very hard to figure out that there was something broke about that system. You know, I mean, that was a jacked up system. And so today, here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about creating systems to develop and deploy healthy leaders. You get systems, right? How are you feeling today? Anybody feeling like you're, you know, maybe running a little bit of a temperature, right? Because if you are, you know that your immune system is starting to break down, right? Or you've eaten too much rich food or drinking too much beverages this weekend, and you're not being able to go to the restroom like you typically like to do. And so you know that your digestive system is kind of breaking down on you. And so you get systems, and you also understand that when it comes to the life of the church, that there are some systems. And so today I want to spend some time talking to you specifically about some of the systems in the life of the church. There's a lot of different people in here. I know many of you are pastors, but some of you run some other systems in the life of the church. So who in here is involved in kids in some way, preschool, children, or youth? So yeah, you're in a system. How many of you are involved in some level of worship leading or something around that area? So you're in a worship system, or maybe you have a role in communications or administration or in the financial realm. And so you're a part of a system in the life of your church. And so today we want to look at specific system that is about developing healthy leaders, because in all of those systems, they're going to require you to have healthy leaders. And so has anybody ever told you that your system was just completely messed up? So you're familiar with the story in Exodus chapter 18, right? So Jethro, Moses's father-in-law, shows up on town, and Moses actually gets to celebrate some things. I mean, he celebrates what God's been doing, and Jethro gets to worship and celebrate all that God's been doing. And so the next day, Moses gets up and he goes off to work, and Jethro sleeps in, has some coffee, taking it easy. About midday, he decides to go out and just check on Moses, see how his work is going. And he gets out there, and what does he see? Yeah, I mean, you know, right? I mean, there's Moses, and as far as you can see, there's this line of people that are waiting. And Moses, I mean, and Jethro actually asked Moses a question. He's like, hey, so what are you doing? And Moses probably was about to tell him all the great things that he's doing. But he was not just asking a question, he was questioning. And he said, what are you doing? I mean, you got people lined up for days. There's something not going on here that's going to be healthy. And then we see that Jethro said to Moses, what you are doing is not good. You and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out, for the thing is too heavy for you. You're not able to do it alone. I mean, that's not a word you want from your father-in-law. It's like, bro, your system's jacked up. I mean, I know you think you're doing a really good job here, but there's something broke in your system. You see this in the New Testament as well, in the book of Acts. So there's a situation going on where there's some widows that weren't getting the daily distribution of food that they needed to get. And so they began to complain and say, man, we need to figure out how to solve this problem, because we've got a problem that we're not being able to distribute the food to all the Hellenist widows. And so immediately you begin to see there's a system that was broke. And so the widows were being neglected in the daily distribution of food. And so here's what we know about when we talk about systems is this. Your system is perfectly designed to produce the results that you are consistently getting. Your system, thinking leadership specifically, is perfectly designed to produce the results that you're consistently getting. And so here's the deal. Moses, guess what? Tomorrow when you wake up, what are you going to get? You're going to get a line of people all day long standing in the sun waiting to eventually get their opportunity to talk to you. And then tomorrow, guess what's going to happen, Moses? You're going to get a line of people that are going to line up for days in the hot sun until they finally get a chance to talk to you, because your system is going to continue to get the exact same results that are getting today. Hey, disciples, guess what's going to happen when the widows come and they're looking for food and they don't get it? What's going to happen tomorrow? They're going to show up and they're not going to get their food, because your system is designed to get the results that you're currently getting. And so what do you have to do if you find out, or somebody actually loves you enough to tell you, man, your system's broke? You got to do something about it. And so here's what you do. If you don't like the results that you are getting, you got to improve the system. You've got to improve the system. And so that's specifically what we're talking about today, is that we want to create systems where we can develop and deploy healthy leaders. Here's the goal. The goal is healthy leaders. I mean, the goal is to have people that are healthy enough to serve God and to serve His church and to serve the world. That's what we're going after. And so we know that we have a responsibility towards that. I mean, we have a responsibility to that. We know that one of our roles is that we're to equip these healthy leaders to minister. I mean, that's most of you are in this room today because you're at that level in your church of some role where you carry that burden. You know that in whatever area you're a part of, that if there's something broken, you can't just go, dude, I sure hope the pastor takes care of that. Or I sure hope some volunteer shows up and takes care of that. You have that responsibility to look at your system and decide if it's broken or not, figure out how you're going to prove it, because one of your key roles is to equip the saints for the work of ministry. And not only to equip the saints for the work of ministry, is your job is to now entrust them to faithful men and women who will be able to also do this work of ministry with you. And so part of our goal is that we're going to build healthy leaders that we're going to equip and we're going to entrust into healthy ministry. So here's how I want to do that today. I want to talk about two questions. Two questions that will help you build your system, to work on your system. And then I'm going to finish that after we talk about those two questions that'll help you think about how to build a healthy system. Is what are some steps? I'm going to actually give you seven steps that will actually help you implement or work on that system. Okay, so that's where we're going. And so here's the very first question you have to ask as you think about, am I building a healthy system? Who do I need to develop? What are the roles within my church? What are the roles within my ministry area that I have to have? And so, I mean, this isn't really rocket science, right? I mean, you know that there are certain roles that are required in order to perform the certain tasks that you've been given. So when I'm given a group of girls to coach, I mean, that's already given to me, right? I mean, there's some positions that we're going to have to work on. We know we've got to have a pitcher. We're going to have a catcher. We're going to have some infielders. We're going to have some outfielders. And so this is the group of girls that I've been given. And so in my particular situation, when I got these girls, I mean, I didn't know where to put any of them. But here's God's grace on that whole particular story, right? And so there was this one girl that wasn't even on my roster, and she shows up to practice one day. And I mean, and she's pretty thick. And she walks in with this swagger, and I'm like, well, who are you? And she walked up, and she goes, I'm your pitcher. I'm like, you weren't at tryouts, were you? She's like, nope. And so here's what happened. Because those guys stacked the deck with all these great players, they never saw this great player. And so by God's grace, I had the best pitcher in the league. Because we know you got to have some of the best roles in order to continue to improve. And so how do you do that? You do this. What do you need? Who do you need to develop to determine? And so you got to spend some time determining your roles. And so the way we talk about this a lot of times, Ram Shriram wrote a book called Leadership Pipeline. Other people talk about it, leadership levels. You just had to think through every single role at every single stage in your process of who do you need to develop. And so let me just show you just a quick pathway of what that looks like. So you have some people at the very beginning stages, you just want them to be able to lead themselves. And so in your context, these are going to be people that they're just group members today. Or maybe they're on a team today and they're just simply team members. And so you've identified that this is a role, this is a group of people in our church. And yet you also know that in order to be healthy, you've got to move some of these people to that next level of leadership. And so you want to move people from leading themselves to eventually some of those people are going to learn what it looks like to really lead other people. And so they're going to step into a team leader role, or they're going to step into a group leader role. This isn't rocket science, right? You already have these things. You have to think systematically about how do you build them. Third one is this. You want to move people from not only leading themselves to leading others to leading leaders. And so maybe the word we use a lot of times is just these are a coordinator. They're going to coordinate multiple team leaders. So we want to help develop them as a leader of leaders. Going on, eventually they're going to maybe take on an entire department. And so now you've designated, it's like, okay, I know I got people this level. I got people at this level. I got people playing this role. I got people in this position. And then ultimately, maybe they might want to lead a church. They're going to be a pastor, elder, or maybe they're going to go off and lead some kind of movement. So very first thing, when you look at all these different spots on your church teams, that's the first thing you got to do is determine what are all these roles that we have to fill. Because here might be what happened, is what is happening. Maybe you, in your particular station, if you put your org chart together, your name would go in every single one of those roles. And we've been talking this whole week about what does healthy leadership look like for yourself. And one of the things we know is not healthy is when we're the guy that everything is dependent upon. That's why Jethro told Moses, what you're doing is not good. You're going to end up wearing yourself out. You're not going to end up getting the ultimate results that you want to get if you're the guy. And so you have to think systematically about all these different levels so that you get the right people. Here's, and so again, what are, the next thing that you begin to think about is what are the exact qualifications and expectations for each of those roles. So you're going to define the roles, and then you're going to designate some of those distinctives. And so here are a couple of things that we do know. When someone's in a lead pastor role, when they're an overseer, when they're an elder in a church, some of those distinctives are given to us out of the Bible, right? I mean, so we can see in the Bible, there's already some clear expectations, there's some clear qualifications for people that are going to sit in certain roles in the life of your church. But the reality is, you know, once you get past your elders or your deacons, I mean, what are the distinctives of someone that's going to be a greeter in your church or someone that's going to change diapers in your children's ministry? And so now you got to do the hard work, right? I mean, it's easy to go, okay, we know how to train elders because we've got some qualifications and expectations, but what about all the other roles in the life of the church? You've got to do some of the hard work of what that looks like. And so what did they say to Moses? You see, when Jethro came to Moses and he said, hey, your system's broke. Here's the problem. You know, you're going to continue to wear yourselves out. You're not going to endure this. Your people are going to eventually struggle. Here's what he says. He goes, Moses, here's what you need to do. You need to find able men from all tribes who fear God and are trustworthy, and they hate a bribe. I mean, so there's some qualifications maybe you might consider. In Acts chapter 6, when it came to feeding the widows, it says, here's what you need to do. You need to pick 7 men of good repute, full of the Spirit, and full of wisdom. And so we see that in some scenarios that there are some specific qualifications, but we know in many areas they're not. And so one of the things that we did at Clear Creek Community Church, we just thought, let's just take generally for a minute, What does a healthy leader look like? And so we said in all of our leadership development pipeline, we know that we want to develop leaders to lead from a gospel perspective with character and with conviction and with confidence. Just generally, right? It's like if we could just find men and women of character. I mean, they love God and they're trying to serve God. Maybe they can say to the people that they're leading, imitate me as I imitate Christ. I mean, if they have just some general character, then that's going to be at least the starting point for where we go. And we want them to be people that have conviction. I mean, because they need to have some passion about what they're called to do. They need to have some conviction about God's word and about God's authority and about their calling. And so they need to have some conviction. And then thirdly, we said that we want them to have confidence. We want them to have confidence in their identity in Christ. I love what we just heard a minute ago. Have confidence in their identity in Christ. Have confidence in how God has made them. But also be given the tools and the skills to walk into their role and feel confident when they walk into that role. And so those are some general ways that we think about that. And so here's what we don't, is that your distinctives then that you want out of certain roles, that determines your development. So if you're going, well, what am I supposed to develop these people on? See, your distinctives determine your development, because now you're able to ask the question, is somebody sitting in this particular role at this particular place on the pipeline, what do they need to do? What do they need to know? Who do they need to be? And so those are now you're moving into the way of figuring out exactly what does that look like. And so I'm going to break that down for you a little bit on some of these distinctives specifically in those areas, because again, when you think about a worship leader, what do they need to know? What do they need to do? Who do they need to be? When you think about someone working in your children's ministry, what do they need to know? Who do they need to be? What do they need to do? And so I'm going to talk about that first again by looking at these young ladies that I had the opportunity to coach. So I get them there on the first day of practice, and I'm going through that in my head. It's like, I know baseball. They obviously don't know baseball. And so what can I bring to the table in order to help move these girls along that are really the Bad News Bears group of girls? And so in my mind, I had to go through that again. I had to go, okay, first off, who do these girls need to be if they're going to play on my baseball team? So anybody ever coached a sport before? Right? I mean, there's character development that you have to get into with these girls. And so character development is this. I mean, who do I want these girls to be? I'm gonna target their heart. And so some of the ways that I targeted their heart and character development was like, girls, here's what it's going to look like when you show up here. We're going to play hard, and we're going to play with passion, and not only that, we're going to respect one another. because that's what it looks like when you play together as a team. And so you're going to play hard and you're going to play with passion, and we're going to learn to respect one another. And whether we win or whether we lose, we're going to be good sports. And because I had a group of 10-year-old girls, we wanted to dig into the heart a little more, and so we made sure they understood this.
Why are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
Yeah, see, I mean, so you get it. I mean, there are certain things where you just have to develop someone's character, right? Think about the roles that you have. Think about the people that you're trying to develop. What we learned about David in Psalm 78, 72, it says this about him. With an upright heart, he shepherded them and he guided them with his skillful hand. When you look at elder qualifications, the bulk of those are focused on character. George Barna says in The Power of Team Leadership, the kingdom of God is never so desperate for leaders that biblical standards should be relaxed to accommodate a person of skills and high potential. I mean, that's why we talk about character first. I mean, because if we're not careful, we get really desperate and go, man, but this dude can knock it out of the park. I mean, they got the skills that we need. And yet if we don't spend the effort that we need to really develop a person's character, then we end up really compromising what God wants for us and the roles that we've established for them to serve. So first thing is that you develop their heart. Second thing is you develop their head. What do these leaders really need to know? See, when you're teaching about knowledge, it's kind of the Socratic method, right? It's question and answer. So first day of practice, I sit these girls on the bench and I say, okay, here's the deal. You're going to get up to bat. How many strikes and balls do you get? I mean, because you're probably going to need to know that if you're going to play softball with us. And then if by chance you hit the ball with the bat that you're holding and it ends up outside of those lines, what is that called? Anybody? Foul ball. Right, there you go. And if it's just by chance that you actually hit that ball and it goes between those white lines, where are you going to go? Anybody know? Yeah, you're going to go first. And so where's first base, ladies? I mean, it kind of came down to that because you've seen it, right? In T-ball, somebody hits a ball and they take off towards third because they got to know some stuff. And let's just say that you're on the base and somebody else hits a ball and it goes in there and it gets caught. You can't run. You got to wait. You got to tag up. And so for most of us, that's fairly basic knowledge, isn't it? But yet it's important knowledge if you're going to actually play the game. And so when you think about the roles, for many of us, if you've been doing it long enough, I mean, you kind of forget some of just the stuff they need to know. And so part of the hard work of building a system is you got to put yourself in as a first-time player and think about, man, if I'm just walking into this role for the very first time, I mean, what do I really need to know? I mean, if I'm going to be sitting in this seat on this team, I mean, surely there's just some baseline knowledge that's going to be helpful to me. And if we're not careful, we walk in and go, all right, everybody grab a bat, here we go, ready to play. And everybody's like, I'm not even sure how many strikes and balls that come in this game. And so we got to spend some effort focusing on their head. We see, again, in David's life, with an upright heart, he shepherded them, and he guided them. I mean, you guide people with knowledge. But here's also what we know by Peter Drucker is that knowledge is information that changes somebody or something or somebody, either by becoming grounds for action or by making an individual capable of different or more effective action. See, the reason we need to hear that is because for many of us, we think the key to training is knowledge. Let's just let them know more, and let's make sure we teach them more, and let's make sure that we give them more, and we think we're developing healthy leaders. And yet knowledge is just the very beginning to move them towards action. And so that's what we see in that text as well as what we see in that. Third thing is this. We got to develop their hands. We got to develop some skills. We got to develop them to be able to do certain things. So again, in my context of coaching baseball, now after we develop some character and we develop some knowledge, now we can actually say, pick up a bat and here's how you hold it. No kidding. First day of practice, they grabbed a bat. Here's home plate. First girl goes and stands right on home plate. I'm like, are you kidding me? Your dad has never been outside with you, has he? And so, I mean, you have to begin to teach them some skills. I mean, they were throwing the ball. I mean, again, this is not just a girl thing, right? But, I mean, it looked like that, right? It's like, it was so awkward to see this happen. And my brother was there with me. And my brother's kind of like Walter Matthau on the Bad News Bears. He's like cussing and throwing stuff and going crazy. And these four girls, I mean, we had to work hard to get them to a level where they just had some baseline skills to play the game. And so, in light of the role that you're talking about, again, David, with an upright heart, he shepherded them and he guided them with his skillful hand. So that's where we start. basic stuff, right? It's like, man, what roles do we need? Now, what are some of the distinctives for people that sit in those roles so that we can actually begin to develop them towards those distinctives, specifically in the area of their head, their heart, and their hands? Now, once you have all that established, you can actually work your system. I mean, that's the hardest part, right? I was talking to a guy in the lobby a minute ago. He's like, man, I'm pastoring this church. I'm preparing messages. I'm counseling people. I'm in a portable, and I'm actually looking to buy some property. I mean, I got all this stuff going on. How do I ever get to the point to actually develop this system to spend some time with leaders? I mean, we know that's the hard part of it, right? It's taking some time where you have to just work on the system. And then once you do the hard work of working on the system, you can begin to work in the system. And so now I want to spend the remainder of our time talking about some of the specifics steps in working the system. So here we go. First step in working your system is you got to identify leaders. You already know what you're looking for, right? I mean, you know the roles that you need. You know some of the things that they need to do if they were in those roles. And so now you begin to identify some people. You remember on the playground when you were the guy that's like, okay, now let's pick some teams. I mean, that's what you're doing. It's like, okay, I got everything out there. Now I get to be the one that picks my team. And so you're picking your team. And again, you're picking your team based upon some specific character traits and some things that you want them to know and do and be. And so you're looking for character, depending on what level they are. I mean, maybe they need to be a growing follower of Christ, or maybe they just need to be able to breathe. You know, if it's into chemistry, it's like, you know, if this guy's going to work with me and they're going to work with people, then probably they need to be engageable and likable. If they're going to be on my IT team, I don't care if people like them or not, or they like people. Just get them in there and get them going. If they're going to have some level of competence and be arrogant enough to go, you know what, they don't have to know anything. As long as they're teachable, then I'm going to put them into some level of development to get them where I need to get them. Are they culturally aligned with your mission and your vision for your church and for your ministry? Or maybe even you just got to ask a question. I mean, are they feeling even called into this role that you're calling them into? And so there's the idea of you got to identify people, and you've already done the hard work and knowing the type of people you're looking to identify. And then just a couple side notes on identifying, because once you identify them, you have to invite them into something. And so specifically, I want to talk about this. When you're inviting somebody into something, you're recruiting to vision, not to need. You're recruiting to vision, not to need. Because how many times do we go, man, we got all these kids and we need more workers. Hey, if anybody can spare us just 1 hour on a Sunday morning, man, we need you. Please, we'll pay you. I mean, you know what I mean? And so we got to recruit to a vision, not to need. I mean, that's what we ought to be great at, because we're part of this grand vision that God's called us to. And so we've got to be able to articulate the vision for our church. We've got to be able to articulate our vision for our ministry. And so when it comes time to identify people and invite them in, we got to recruit to vision and not to need. And then specifically, I want you to think about this, is appeal to higher motivations. Appeal to higher motivations when you're inviting people in to be a part of this grand work that you're a part of. And here's what I mean by that. You might need to start out a baseline, because most people start with the selfish motivation. And so it's okay if you want to start there. It's like, man, this is a great way for you to get connected in the life of our church. How many times have you said that? You know, it's like, hey, man, we know we have this need, but let's talk about it like this. This would be a great way for you to get connected into the life of the church. You have some talents. You have some skills. Man, this is a great way for you to use those. Who is that focused on? Yeah, I mean, it's a self-motivation. And maybe that's the starting point when you identify people and you begin to invite them in. It's like, man, this is going to be great for you. But we don't want to stay there, right? Because there's also this whole ideal of other people that we actually get to serve. And so you move from just say, this isn't really all about you. It's like, what a difference you can make in the lives of these children. What a difference you can make in this ministry area so that people are being served and people are being cared for and people are being made disciples. And so you move from, this isn't really about you. It's ultimately, or not ultimately, but it's a part of serving the body. And so you appeal to a little higher motivation than ultimately you appeal to the fact that, you know, we get to do this for the glory of God. Whether we eat or drink or whatever we do, everything that we do is going to be for His honor and for His glory. And so if you've gotten into the rhythm of trying to think that you're building teams by just guilting people into filling a position out of a need, we've got to recruit to vision and not to need, and we got to start to appeal to a higher level of motivation. And so very first one, that the first step you take is just the whole identification side. Second thing is this, is the assessment side. I mean, hopefully you're going to have a relationship with some folks, right? And so it was like, hey, I've identified you. I've invited you in. You've actually said that you have some level of interest. And so I want to take some time to assess you. I love this cartoon. It says, I'm afraid we don't have anything for you right now, but if we get really desperate for people, we'll be in touch, right? I mean, that's some level of assessment, because you're going to assess. It's like, dude, thanks for showing up today, but we'll get back with you. Or if you're going to apply for a job at IKEA, make a chair and take a seat, right? I mean, that's a form of assessment. Some of the things that we think about when we're talking about assessment is really a three-step process. We want to provide an assessment application. We want to provide an assessment interview, and we want to have an assessment report. So here's how that looks in different areas at different levels is, let's just put something in your hand so you at least see that you have some level of interest in this role. And again, I mean, there was a time where, man, I put together this amazing application. I mean, it's like 20 pages long, the most thorough thing. I mean, I would have sold it to you. I mean, it was an amazing application. But here's what I found out is that people started self-selecting out of the process before I even had time to interview them, because there was so much information in there that felt so overwhelming and felt so convicting. And many of them are like, dude, I don't even have a chance to get to that role. And so here's what I had to do in that situation. I had to repent, because I'm like, that's not very shepherding. That's not very pastoral. It's like, I don't even get a chance to talk to these people. They're self-selecting out of the process before I even get a chance to love them and nurture them and set a path forward for them to grow. And so there is a place for an application, but you have to be careful that your application isn't so heavy on the front end that everybody just kind of bails out and you don't actually get face time to really be able to pastor the people. And so the way we try to do is we try to give them a little bit of a taste of what the role would look like, invite them into some FaceTime so that we can actually begin to have some conversation. Conversation is really around what we hope that they can do, what we hope that they can know, and what we want them to be. And so as I sit across the table from them and I have coffee with them, I'm asking some of those questions. So tell me what you know about this. Tell me your current behavior in this activity. Hey, what drives your convictions about wanting to be a part of this? And so I'm beginning to assess through my questions what their next step is going to be, specifically an assessment report or a personal growth plan, because they're going to come out of that assessment, and very rarely, if I'm looking for 10 things, is everybody going to hit on all 10 cylinders? I mean, that person probably doesn't exist. Because quite honestly, for some of them, it's a knowledge base or a skills base that they might have had it for one church, but if they're coming into this church and into this role, I want them to understand how we think about that here and how we do that here. And so there's some of those things that we began to talk about, and then we develop an assessment report out of that, all right? And so there's identification, there's assessment, and then we move into the area of equipping, where we're going to actually take the knowledge and the character and the skills that we need for that particular role, and we're going to begin to go at it hard to develop them in that. And so again, I mean, I think about these young ladies that I had the opportunity to coach. I mean, they walked in scared to death because they didn't know how to catch a ball. They didn't know how to hit a ball. I mean, their level of confidence was so low. But after a few weeks of training them, of equipping them, of giving them some of the tools in order for them to be successful, I mean, their confidence just began to rise, because competence creates confidence. And so part of our job in moving people into healthy leadership roles is we have to invest in them in a way so they can walk in with some level of confidence to be able to accomplish the task, accomplish the skill that we're actually asking them to perform. And so in a minute, when we get into question and answer, we can talk about what are some of the venues that we use specifically to train. So you can kind of keep that in your mind a little bit, as well as maybe what are some of the specific knowledge, character, and skills training that we give to certain people at certain levels. So if you want to hear more about that, we can talk about that in a minute. One of the things that we found, though, that is the easiest way to equip, because many people, you're like, man, I'm just so busy. How do you develop this whole equipping system, and what resources do you use, and how much time does it take? I mean, it's hard, right? And so we've adopted the very first thing that we're going to do at all different levels is we're going to adopt just the apprenticing model of equipping. And so here's the basic apprenticing model of equipping. First one is this: I do, you watch, and we talk. So how does that look? So I'm gonna ask somebody to come be a greeter at the front door in the church. Okay, that's a role that we need. We know that we got to have some people that fill that role, and we know that maybe even people are a little bit intimidated to do that role if they've never done it. And so there's like, okay, here's what it's gonna look like. I'm gonna do it. You're going to sit around and watch me, and we're going to talk. And so here's what it's going to look like. We finished that morning. I we go grab some coffee. And we say, hey, what did you see? What did you notice? I said, did you notice where I stood? I didn't stand right in the middle of the door, did I? No, you kind of stood off to the side. Why do you think that is? Because it would block people. Very good. All right, now we're on the first. So yeah, you kind of stand off to the side if you're going to be a greeter. Hey, and did you notice this? I had a thing of mints in my pocket, and about every 15 minutes, I pulled out a mint and put it in my mouth. You notice that? That's helpful. If you're going to be in the role of a greeter, nobody likes to be greeted with bad breath. And so make sure you keep your pockets full of mints. And did you notice this? Did you notice I just kind of stood there with my hands crossed, and like every lady that walked in, I didn't just give her this big bear hug? Or every dude that walked by, I didn't just shake his hand and pat him on the back? Did you notice I did that? And he's like, yeah, I kind of noticed that. It didn't seem like maybe you were that engaging with some of those people. I said, well, I mean, you got to consider some things. I mean, there's some people that are germophobes, that for the very first time, somebody invited them to our church, and they're going to maybe hear the gospel for the very first time, and they're walking up, and they just saw you shake the last seven people's hands, and they're thinking, oh my gosh, that guy's about to shake my hand, and I don't like germs on my hand, and so what am I going to do with that? I mean, that sounds silly, right? But I mean, actually, that's a practice that I practice. So I sit back, and if somebody extends me their hand, I'm going to extend my hand. If somebody extends the fact that they might want to give me a hug, I'm going to give them a hug back. But I don't want to create some barrier for somebody so that the whole time that we're seeing how great our God is, they're thinking about, dude, I'm going to die. I mean, and so I'm going to do this, and you're going to watch, and we're going to just talk about it. That's step one. Step two is this. Hey, next week, why don't you come back? I'm going to do it. I'm going to have you sit there and help me, and then we're going to talk about it. And I'm going to say, man, how did you feel? What did you like about that? What did you not like about that? Do you think you might want to come back next week? And if you do, here's what's going to happen. You're going to do it. You're going to take the lead. I'm going to help. And then we're going to talk. And then lastly, week four, you're going to do it. I'm going to just kind of be a bystander, and we're going to talk. I mean, that's just a basic form of development. And again, I mean, there are technical roles that require more than 4 weeks, right? If you got somebody running your soundboard, I mean, it might take a little longer to do that. An elder development process, it might take a little bit longer to do that. But even in our elder development process, here's what happens on a regular basis with our elders. And so somebody calls and they say they got somebody sick in their house and they want us to come and pray. And so first time we showed up in that situation, I prayed. We went home afterwards, got together and said, so what did you notice about our time in that home with that family? Or I had some discipline issues come up where we needed to go and confront somebody. So I bring an elder with me and we sit down over coffee with this individual and we talk through the issues and we talk afterwards and said, did you see how I kind of led into that conversation? Did you see how we kind of handled that situation? Next time that situation comes up, you're going with me again. But this time, I don't want you to sit there quietly. I want you to begin to speak into that situation as well. And so this is just a very basic equipping tool that you can use. All right, for sake of time, we're going to keep moving. So once we've identified, we've assessed, now we're able to deploy people off into ministry. Into the game, right? No. I mean, many times we're like, man, I worked this whole system and I identified the right people and I've equipped them and I sent them off and now I can go on and do something else that I've been wanting to do for a long time. But not if you're going to develop healthy leaders, because there's a whole other side of that process, right, where you have initial equipment, but then you have some ongoing training. So if you got a group of leaders and they're starting to phase out, it's like, dude, man, all my leaders seem to leave, or they just seem to be tired all the time, or man, they're just not doing what I want them to do, and you find yourself always mad because the system's broke. I mean, it's not necessarily the people's fault, it's the system's fault. And so you got to go back to your system and begin to go, okay, I left them too early because I got to stay with them and I got to do some ongoing equipping with people at all these different levels of involvement. And so we've done that with our elders. I mean, we had some very initial equipping, and then now as they're elders, we have ongoing equipping. Same thing with small group leaders. We did some initial equipping, and now that they sit in that seat and they're serving and caring for people, we have ongoing equipping. And so you got to have, on the back end of deployment, continual equipping, celebration, as well as evaluation. Again, people want to know that you appreciate what they're doing. They want to feel valued by you. They need to be evaluated by you as well. And so you got to ask some hard questions every now and then. Are you liking what you're doing? Do you still feel engaged? Do you still feel called? Do you still feel passionate about the role that you're in? Or maybe when somebody does decide to exit out of that, do you have an exit interview where you can evaluate and go, tell me why you feel like this wasn't a good fit? Was it your leader that was leading you? Did you not feel like you were resourced well? Did you not feel like you were celebrated very well? Did you feel like you were in the wrong seat to begin with? And then we can begin to evaluate our whole system to go, maybe we had an identification problem. Maybe we had an assessment problem. Maybe we had an equipping problem. Maybe we haven't celebrated them very well. Maybe we just haven't done ongoing evaluation very well. Somewhere in that system, it might be broke. But at least now you can begin to ask the questions to know, how can I improve the system? All right. So a lot of information. Let's take some time to just do some Q&A. And so you can talk about any of these particular levels. You can talk about how do we do specific things in the area of heart, head, hands. So let's fire away. We got some time. What you got? Yeah. So the question is, are there already existing resources so we don't have to come up with a whole new plan from scratch? I mean, there obviously are books that you could use. I would challenge you though to understand your context first and foremost, because even in a multi-campus church, I mean, we put years into developing a system that we could take this systems binder and take it over to this campus and implement this exact system. And we learned some things. I mean, there were some things that were really helpful in that, but the size culture issues, if maybe the people you're hearing about have a church of 1,000 and your church is 200 or your church is 50, and so you realize the system that they have for setting up and tearing down a building is maybe going to look different than the system that you're going to have. And so you have to do the hard work in your own context, for one, in order to be most effective in developing that. But, I mean, as far as I can give you some books that help you think specifically about that. But, again, when you get into this, you're talking about, you mentioned about three different things. I mean, you're talking about preschool ministry. I mean, yeah, there's 100 different ways to do preschool ministry. And so some of that's maybe finding the way that you're going to do it and then going, who most aligns with us in that? Or taking some time to the very beginning and go, you know, let's go learn all the different models and then let's be prayerful about which model do we feel like works best within our context. And then you can start from there as well. Okay, what else? Yeah. Yeah, good question. So the question was, can you talk about what an assessment report looks like? So for, let me give you it in the context of our small group leadership. Okay, so we know there's some specific things that we're looking for a small group leader. We're going to identify some of those things that maybe they're inadequate in, that they need to grow up in. And so coming out of that report, I already know there's 9 different things that we're looking for in that assessment report of a small group leader. 2 of them, every single person that we assess is going to have to do those 2 things because they're unique to our context. And those are really geared around skills and knowledge base. And so we want them to at least know, when it comes to skill, how do we make disciples at our church? And so we're gonna make sure you at least understand that, because you might have been teaching Sunday school for the last 30 years, but we want to talk about what does it look like to make disciples at our church. And so you're going to have that as one of your growth plan. Second thing you're going to have is there's something we want you to read so that we all have a baseline knowledge so that we can talk to each other with a baseline knowledge on this particular role. And then the rest of it really has to do with character. So some of the things we're looking at, like, so for instance, we're looking at some of their missional intensity. And so in the conversation with them, I'm like, so man, tell me about some of the lost friends that you have. And they're like, I don't know if I really have any that I could really, you know, I would say are friends. I'm like, well, what do you believe about that? Oh no, I believe lost people matter to God. I'm like, good. You got one right. What do you believe the Bible teaches about lost people? It's like, man, I don't really know that much about what it really says about that. So I'm like, cool, man. So you go through enough of those kind of questions. By the time we get to the end of the interview, I go, hey, what area do you feel like you might need to grow in the most? What do you think they're going to say? Oh, that whole deal about lost people, I think I probably ought to grow in that. I'm like, you think so? Me too. And so here's the deal. So then it becomes, I'm not just sitting there telling them, here's what you need to do and here's when you need to have it done. I'm letting them begin to assess as I'm assessing them. And so they've already said, man, the whole deal about lost people, I think that's probably an area I need to grow. I'm like, me too. Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to send you a growth plan when we leave here. And in that growth plan, you're going to be given some tools to be able to learn and know and do some things that will help grow your heart, grow your knowledge, grow your understanding about what it means to have friends with lost people. And so that's kind of how it works out. So at the end of the report, I mean, at the end of the meeting, the next day, they actually receive a personal growth plan that they can begin to work on. That growth plan also goes to the person that's going to be coaching them through that. What I didn't say was in every level, at every single level in the life of our development, there is someone attached to that individual as their personal coach, their personal mentor to walk them through that. It's not me. It's not even typically one of our staff. It's somebody that's already been through that process. And now, again, we're entrusting to you so that you can turn and you can entrust it to somebody else. And so everybody that is sitting in the seat of a small group leader role, they know that their responsibility is to identify future small group leaders They're going to send them to us, and we'll assess them, but then we're going to send them back to them so that they can begin to mentor them through the process that we give them. So what are some questions? Yeah. Yeah, so the question was about scalability, things that you can train face-to-face, things that you can train through technology. And so we've adopted the process of kind of a high-tech, high-touch form of leadership development. And so the way that looks for us is in most cases, especially on the front end of this pipeline, I mean, when it comes to developing somebody's knowledge base, we could invite them into a classroom on Sunday nights at 6 o'clock for the next 10 weeks. But for us, it's like the scalability, that is, people are busy, people are coming from miles around. Is that the best way to disseminate knowledge to those individuals? And so what we said is that's going to be a high-tech form for us, because we're going to go, hey, go read this article, go listen to this podcast, go watch this video, go read this book, and develop some knowledge base that you're going to need so that when we actually come back together, there is a high-touch aspect to it. Because two of the high-touch aspects of it is now you're going to be able to apply that, what you're learning. So how are you going to apply that? It's going to be an on-the-job skill. So if it's somebody in student ministry, okay? And so student ministry, like, man, here's some things you need to know if you're going to be a part of student ministry, but there's some things that we're going to do. We're going to have some counseling. We're going to be leading some small groups. You're going to come and you're going to actually practice those skills with us, and so that's in relationship. But specifically when it comes to character, that's a one-on-one, face-to-face deal that just says, man, let's get to know each other. I want to press into you some of the things that we're learning about what it's going to look like to be in this role. And so a lot of our training is high tech on the knowledge side, high touch on the skills, and on the character side. Yeah. Yeah. He asked the question of, do you communicate this pipeline to people? And so some of that is true. So if you have somebody that's leading a team in your context, I mean, you want to let them know, because they're meeting with the leader of leaders. And so they already know, it's like, who's that guy that's gathering all the leaders together to lead us? And so they already know that there is a role that is above them, because that person is doing their role to minister to them. So it's like, hey, and we tell them, hey, we're going to be growing by God's grace. We're going to be planting some churches. We're going to be multiplying some campuses. And so here's the deal. We're going to have to all develop, and we're going to need that person as we grow, as we plant a church, as we plant a campus. We're going to need other people just like that. And so we're constantly telling them, it's like, we got to continue to identify the future leaders, because some of us are going to need to step into those roles as we begin to grow and as we begin to multiply. And so we put that out there in those form or fashion. And most of those roles, very few of those roles do people self-select into. Because again, the people in front of them, we're constantly beating into their head, who are you identifying? Who do you see that you think can come behind you and take on your role? Who are you entrusting to? And so in almost every one of those pipelines, the people's names that we're getting are people that are telling us, hey, I've identified this guy, we need to get him trained. And so most people are invited into that development process rather than self-selecting into that development process. Next question. Yeah. Yeah. He asked the relationship between the heart and the head. So someone that maybe has a great heart and maybe they get filled with knowledge and their heart begins to shrink. None of us have ever had that problem, right? And so that's a great question. And so part of it is that's why we have to continue to have what we would say is kind of a healthy diet of leadership to these guys. It's a healthy diet of discipleship. It's like, we're going to continue to press on your heart. We're going to continue to press on your head. We're going to continue to press on your skills, because we don't want you to become anemic in any of those areas. We want you to be healthy in every one of those areas. And so as we begin to see something like that happen, we again want to go back to the heart and start to build that up. But you have people that at some point they just can't, they don't have the competency to do the skill that you maybe need them to do. And so at times you just have to have some hard conversations of redirecting them by assessing them on the role that they need to play, because they might think that they ought to be the pitcher on the team. And you're like, you're not that good. And you're not going to be pitcher on this team, but we do have some other places that you can really thrive. And so some of that is just putting them in the right seats. Yeah. What area do I find most difficult in this process? I think probably it's continuing to keep people motivated to identify their replacements. I mean, and here's why. Some people just like what they do, and they don't ever want to give it away. You know, and so that seems to be one of the hardest things. Like, man, you've got to create some space for this next generation of leader. And you need to move. And I love the language of Mark Miller in the book Secret of Teams. He says, you know, there, at some point you got to move from being just a doer to a delegator to a developer. And so part of the idea is that your job is to equip the saints. Your job is to entrust to other people. And so you can't just continue to be a doer your entire life. As you, we have the responsibility to move beyond just doing the task of ministry, but to develop in others to do the work of ministry. And so I think that's one of the most difficult parts of the process is continuing to push that down into the life of your team. So that becomes just part of who you are. Next question. Where's that? Just start talking. I'll find you. Okay, good. Great question. He said, so, you know, you said recruit to vision and not to need, but what happens when you just, you know, your growth is going to a point where you just have some real tangible, legitimate needs. You need some people to fill. And so we would say that, I mean, there are seasons where it's kind of a whatever it takes mentality. You know, but think about in the sports realm as well. It's like, I mean, you got a preseason, you got a season, you got a postseason. You know, and so you're going to work hard at times in those seasons, but you're going to get an off season also. The problem with a lot of churches is there's never an off season. And so you just continue to go, man, we need you. We need you. Man, we got this next initiative. We need you. We got this next thing coming up. We need you. And so part of that is there are times where you just got to say, man, whatever it takes, all hands on deck. We got this that we got to run hard at, and it's going to require some extra effort and time and energy from everybody at this point. But you also got to recognize that you got to have some off season so that people can kind of refuel so that you can get people in the right seats. So, yeah. Where does caring interact in the structural sense, and what does that practically look like? And so the scalability is what provides for structures of care. And so when Jethro told to Moses, like, man, you need to put some people over 1,000, you need to put some people over 100s, you need to put some people over 50s, you need to put some people over 10s. I mean, you do that so that you can actually care for the people that you're leading. And so if I'm only leading the masses, I can't really care. And so there's got to be some structures of care in place that are small enough where people know one another, they can be celebrated by one another, they can evaluate how that person's really doing. And so that would be the scalability size of it, is making sure your teams are broke down into sizes where they can be cared for. The other side of that is the discipleship system that we have in place at the church is what we would say that is our number one place of care. And so we're like, if you're on my team, I'm going to love you, I'm going to care for you, but in order to really know you and disciple you and do life with you, that's going to come through a small group system primarily. And so that's how we would, again, we know that in some cases your service team is also your discipleship team, but in our case, most people are serving and doing life in different places. One more question. Just talk. Yeah. So the question was: so when your system's broke, you know, we said it's not necessarily a people problem; it's a system problem. Is that true coming across the board? And again, there was a situation where we got into a point where, like, hey, every small group leader, you got to have an apprentice. You got to have an apprentice. You got to have an apprentice, right? Because if we're going to multiply, then everybody's got to have an apprentice. And then what I found myself doing was I just started getting bitter. It's like, dude, nobody's getting apprentices. Man, our people don't love Jesus. I mean, they're not doing what we're asking them to do. They said they would do it. Now they're lying to us. And I started getting all worked up about how sorry our leaders are that they're not developing apprentices. And so then I had to pull back and go, man, is that really what's going on? And what I realized was, like, I had to repent. It's like, we don't have a good enough system in place to really help them. They were like, we don't know how to identify them. We don't know what some of the characteristics are. And then when we do identify them, we don't really have the bandwidth and the time to train them. And so we said, okay, then we need to take on the bulk of the training. You take on the bulk of identification, but you're also going to play a role in coaching. And so when we pulled back, we realized our people were doing the best they could, but our system wasn't helping them to succeed the way we want them to succeed. So,
All right. Let's say thanks to Chris. You know, I know every time Chris talks about this kind of thing, there are a couple of reactions. One is, man, that just feels so big. And maybe, you know, where you are in your church, you're very early in the stages of your church life, and the whole development of that just feels overwhelming. And if that's where you are, let me say a couple of things to you real quick. One is, you know, you already have a system. Your system is written in your head, even if it's not written in paper. It's the way that you're doing what you're doing. And if you'll begin to think deliberately about that, it will really help you in developing your church to take the critical step of moving from compliant volunteers to competent volunteers. That's the difference that some church plants, they haven't moved beyond that compliant phase. We all know this, right? I mean, church planter, you found somebody, they said they would oversee children's ministry, and they have a pulse, and you said, you're in. You're my gal. You're my guy, whatever. And then you begin to realize that they're not really competent to do that, and the ministry outgrew them really quickly, maybe the first week, who knows. But you got to a place where then you had to look at someone and say, you were willing to do this. Now we have someone who's really competent to do this, and you have to make that kind of transition. Your system should help you facilitate that transition, which is a very critical transition. So the second thing I would say to you, and I'll try to be brief on this, is, you know, we talk about really the speed bar and the strength bar in terms of our systems. So the speed bar happens when you're starting a church and you're developing leaders, and the speed, you want speed, right? Do you want your church to grow strong, or you want it to grow fast? Yes. Yeah, we want, right? We want to reach as many people as we can. We want it to be a strong church. But the speed bar is simply that the bar has to be low in terms of qualifications, not compromising character in appropriate places where the Bible gives us direction, but the speed bar stays low, so that in some cases you say, if you can spell Jesus and you have a pulse, you're in. That's the speed bar. So you begin to develop this team. So here's how I want to tell you, as a church planter and a young church plant, how you can develop what Chris has developed over time. And that is, as you start with a low bar, the speed bar, each year you add training and development that's going to be given to your leaders, and you inch up the qualifications, the requirements for leaders over time. And each year, as you inch that up, giving a lot of energy to, you know, this specific year's training qualifications that you find necessary for your leaders, you'll ultimately reach a point where you say, This bar now represents not only that we have the right leaders, or we have enough leaders, but they're strong in their leadership. In other words, they've met the qualifications. We have ongoing training for that. So the bottom bar is really about speed. That's how people get in the door. The top bar ultimately becomes the kind of training that we want to give to people. Now, the training we give to small group leaders to make disciples, or to people in ministry to oversee structures, or to give ongoing training, all of those things were developed over time, but now represent a strength bar for us. How can we make sure that the church that we've been entrusted with is strong in character, in skill, and in knowledge? Well, we do it through developing that strength bar through years of investment. So don't be overwhelmed by the scope of all of that. Just begin to chip away at developing a leadership development process that is going to serve you for a lifetime in the history of your church. Okay. So I want to encourage you to talk about this with one another before we go today. We'll only have a few minutes for this. So this is specifically something that would be helpful for your teams. So if you came with a team of people, you definitely want to be with each other. Or if you're a pastor, you kind of came by yourself, your church is new or small or not even yet planted, maybe you can find somebody around you, two or three guys that also in kind of the same situation. And I would urge you to talk about what is the critical next step that you need to take in order to develop healthy systems that develop healthy leaders. What's the critical next step? And maybe you don't know. And if you don't, maybe the group that you're with can say, okay, describe to me where you are. This is where we think a good critical next step could be for you. And if you can identify just one next step, then you at least have something to go on when you get back home. All right? So if you would, get with your teams. What's that one critical next step?
All right. You guys have got about 9 minutes until 8 minutes until lunch. And so feel free to use some time in here to finish your conversations. If you want further conversation with me, you can go to leadership@clearcreek.org. leadership@clearcreek.org. I don't have a book or Instagram or anything fun like that. And so if you want to just have a dialogue, be happy to do that. All right. God bless you guys. Have a good lunch.